Don't do brass tacks. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
It's 10:38.
We want to stop the blood. Ms. Marley said the country is leaking blood for 15 years. That's the problem. We need to stop the blood. Have Ms. Marley stop the blood. That's the problem. Don't pick that. Forget the past. We're giving future. The people speak. Help her now. Give her ideas. That's the problem now. So tell your people to get what they want. You got the Bible now. Turn over that leaf. That's the problem. The country was sick. What is it now? The rain stopped falling. Farming. The farming gone now. Plant seeds now. The ground right, ready.
Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. This person says that all they want to hear from the government is when the road tax and tipping fee will be abolished. They say the road tax on the truck that they drive is $3,700 a year, and that's what they care about most. That tipping fee issue really needs to be addressed, because it seems to me as though we have had an upsurge in people dumping indiscriminately since the tipping fee was introduced, and we need to return to that particular matter. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? You're on the air?
Yeah, I think I just skipped it. Mr. Ellis, good day to you.
Yes, good morning.
I want to first let me compliment the station team. This is the first time that I've known a station move right through an election process without having to clip their broadcast. And I must compliment Starcom VOB for the work they have done, which enabled them to carry a broadcast throughout an election process. I think you will agree with me on that, that several years ago, when elections came around, you had to clip the broadcast, call-in programs, because of what you may believe may come across. So I want to compliment you and Starcom for being able to carry a series of programs right up, or even on election there as such, or just after election there. So congratulations to you.
Well, I think that what is more important than that is how we carry the program. It wasn't just to do it. To what extent was it done in a way that was fair and balanced and did not appear to take a side, encouraging people to vote for one party or the other? That is a critical part of it.
That's beautiful. What I want you to do for the public over the next couple of weeks, to look at the pensions, personally, I want to put a point to find out if I'm seeing it. Normally, if you're employed, you have to have at least 500 stars contributions in order to get your benefit, right, Mr. Edward, Mr. Ellis? I believe that every member of parliament has to make a contribution. And in making that contribution depends on his salary. And if he does not make that amount of contributions to his national insurance, then somewhere he's not given the pension. The pension equates to a give back. So some people seem to think that as long as you enter parliament and as long as you become a member of parliament, that you're entitled to the pensions payable. But my knowledge tells me that you have to make X amount of contributions similar to the average.
That's correct.
Right, and it's based on your salary structure as well. If your salary structure is of a certain nature, then obviously those deductions will at least equate to that amount. So when people talk about parliamentarians getting pension, I think they need to understand that their contributions made from the salaries of those politicians who enable them to go the term requested by the National Insurance and by the laws of Barbados, which would enable them to draw the pension due to salary or wages which is paid at 70. Am I right to say that?
That's what I understand. The critical thing here is that people make a contribution. But notwithstanding that reality, there are people who feel that having to serve for just two terms to get a pension is a little bit out of sync with what happens with the rest of the community. There's some major disquiet with that approach. You know that.
I agree, but I'm wondering, and I think this should be based on the amount of sittings with a period of time. I wonder if this does not equate to the amount for the two terms or 8 years and over. That is to say that yes, if I am to understand you and myself agreed on the principle of deductions made from salary, in order that your stars would be given and you receive the contributory pension, is this not going to relate to the same thing, or they get the pension regardless outside of the 8 years?
I'm not fully au fait with all those details. You should be more au fait with it. You're a former MP.
But that's what I'm saying to you, Mr. Ellis. I'm saying to you.
You don't get MP pension?
That's a personal question, Mr. Ellis.
Let me ask you something. You serve for 2 terms or one?
I did not serve for
You served for
terms.
1 term. So that means you are unlikely to begin a pension. What personal question that is?
No, but you see the fact remains.
As long as we know whether you serve for 2 terms or not in Parliament, because it's not just sitting in the lower house. It's a combination of the lower house and the upper. And if you have served for 2 terms, then you would have been eligible.
And this also goes to other contributions. If you had made contributions elsewhere outside of Parliament, mm-hmm. then it adds up to your contributions outside of Parliament and within the corridors of Parliament, your contributions are deducted. So pensions are there for you from your previous job and from your parliamentary position.
Yes.
Right? So I think I did answer the question in reverse for you.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. This person says, I am a supporter of the DLP and stand ready to continue with the DLP. Just saying, my policy is give this new government 3 months to settle administrative matters before I bother with them. Of course, I am paying attention, though. Also, as a DLP supporter, there's more I can discuss. I hope to call in sometime. 3 months. So what's a reasonable period? 3 months, 6 months, a year? What kind of honeymoon do you think they should have? Down to brass tacks.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good morning.
I like to associate myself with your preamble, as I also look forward for you receiving the Gold Crown of Merit for your contribution in the field of journalism this year. However, as you had previously drawn to my attention that the Jews had gone back to Jerusalem.
I think your phone line has dropped out. Sounds that way to me. Hello, down to brass tacks. Let's take another call. And he can try to get back to us a little later. Hello. Down to brass. That's going until 1 o'clock today. Just a reminder that that's where we are. Okay, so seems as though something might have gone wrong with the phone line as a whole. We're coming right back. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hi, good morning. David?
Yes. Good morning.
Hi, how are you keeping?
I'm well, and you?
I'm fine. Was it a case of your station being accused of being biased?
Some people did, but, you know, the people who are middle of the road can make a better determination of that. I mean, if you are in that middle zone, you know, you could appreciate whether or not we have been. You expect that people who are on either side of the political fence, as long as they don't get what they want, they may come with that allegation. But as I said from the very beginning, it's a question, too, of you're trying to be balanced. At the same time, you also cannot avoid reflecting what that reality is out there in the community.
But I could honestly say, from my point of view, I thought you all were very fair, don't you tend to. But I clearly remembered, and I also chuckled too when I heard it tonight, you guys are online. Maxine McLean basically implied that you and your company have never really carried anything positive when it came to the Democratic Labour Party.
Come on, they failed to do their own work, and they wanted somebody else to do their work for them. I mean, prepared to answer that. You know, a scapegoat. Everybody else, you know, we're a scapegoat for that. They are the ones who failed to take the opportunities that were afforded them.
But it made me laugh so much that night that, you know, I started to remember the way the Caribbean Propaganda Corporation was used like an arm for the former administration. And, you know, it so amazed me that you could even come and basically blame you guys for not caring positive things about the administration. And that same that same television station, you know. You know, it was only probably the last 3 weeks, really, probably literally at the election, that anything pertaining to the opposite, well, there's no government now, but the opposition then, was carried by CBC. Nothing at all was being, I mean, for years, not months, for years. And then to come and blame people that people weren't carrying things positive. You know, but you know, I think, not your radio station, but the truth is that the people of Barbados, David, mobilized themselves to take down a government legally in this election. Because this government was taken down by the people. And I've always said that when you want to make a man feel bad about himself, when he can't pay his mortgage, and he can't pay his rent, and he can't buy food the way he wants it, he finds someone to blame. And that's why people went and voted the way they voted. Because people were angry, and angry for years. David, I have said it, and I say it again, I was born in a DLP household. I supported the Democratic Labour Party. The first 4 times I voted in this country, I supported the Democratic Labour Party. But I would never sit back and claim, because my mother was a D and my father was a D, I would see what the destruction of my country over the last 8 to 10 years and say I could agree with that. I could never agree with that. I don't care what party is in power. None. And when the day comes that the BLP started doing the same thing, I would call your program and say the same thing. Because I want my country to progress. I want the ministers to do well. When the country does well, everybody does well. But we sat back in this country, David, and watched 3 major construction firms gobble up all the major contracts in this country. Big contracts, medium contracts, small contracts. Because of greed and at the expense of small people who have before gotten smaller contracts to get them,
you know
everything.
The real crux of the matter of the period was the leadership question. In other words, if a lot rides on the role of a prime minister in this country, and that prime minister must be sensitive to what is being said at a variety of levels. Not only what is being said, let's say, in a program like this, but our prime minister must also be interacting with business people, people in their own constituency, the Indian community, a wide range of people. And on the basis of that interaction, you must get a feel for matters that are relevant and things that you need to do to correct the image of your administration. If you do not do that, then you run into a lot of trouble. You cannot be that insensitive. Therefore, there are a lot of things that happened in the last administration that it, had the prime minister acted differently, I think that you would have seen less of the kind of the defeat that they faced, the kind of crushing defeat that they faced in this election because of that lack of sensitivity.
But David, you're the head of your organization there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you know what your juniors are doing? Would you not know what they're doing? How could you sit back and allow what took place in this country under your watch? And then people say that the Prime Minister was such a decent man. There's no way that the Prime Minister could not have known what was going on.
You mean that he was a decent man? I didn't hear them say that he wasn't a decent man. I think
that's what you just said.
You know, he was not. I didn't hear that. I heard him say that he was a decent man.
Okay. No, I said that. People said the Prime Minister is a decent man.
Is a decent man, correct.
A decent man. But
right.
How could you have sat back and allowed what went on in this country to go on? David, you know when you go to the streets, right? And I guess you would know because you talk to people on the street. You know when you go on the street, people could tell you almost everything that was going on in Barbados. When it came to things like corruption and what was going on, everybody could speak to you. Don't tell me that you are the leader could not hear what was going on.
I want to say this on that matter, though. I don't think that the Barbados Labour Party in this campaign said as much about the issues of wrongdoing as they saw them, as we would have heard in the lead-up to the election campaign. And therefore, to some extent, it appeared as though you make these charges, but you don't produce enough evidence to support it. Now, what's left to be seen is how the Labour Party administration deals with these areas and the things that they discover in relationships. For instance, there is a lot of interest in what has happened at the Bridgetown port over time. And while they haven't spoken about these things on the campaign trail as much as we thought they might have, there are people who are worried about how taxpayers' money has been spent. There are people who want those who might not have handled the taxpayers' money well enough to be called to account. There are people who are not satisfied that a new administration should come and say, okay, we will make sure that it doesn't happen here. But they want to make sure that if there is excessively bad behavior that was committed previously, that something is done about some of it. They don't expect that you're going to deal with all of it. But what are described as the most egregious examples, the worst examples, then you expect that there will be some follow-up. Because the follow-up is necessary also to signal to people now that you don't want that happening.
Again.
You got to pay a price for it. That's what it's about. That's what I'm hearing from people. Huh?
But let me give you one example of one, David, that I'm surprised.
I don't want specifics, though, you know. I don't want specifics, though.
All right, well there was a particular... All right, not specific,
I don't want specifics.
But there was a particular sale of a property that that came to the public, that was never mentioned at all. And that surprised me during the election. A major property in the West Coast. And it never came up. And it surprised me, you know. And that is one that has always bothered me.
Okay.
But anyhow, we do need to give the new administration some time. And we will watch, and we'll wait, and we'll see, and we'll hope for the best. But I, myself, expect to give them at least a year to 2 years to see how things go, because this country is not going to turn around overnight. So I hope people don't expect miracles. But we need to give them some time.
I think that's a very significant part of the whole process right now. It is to be conscious of the kind of work that has to be done and the burden that we have to carry as Barbadians in trying to turn things around. The Prime Minister's desire to do work and hit the ground running should not be her desire alone, you know. It is not the desire and the objective of just the 30 people and their supporters. That should be a Barbadian pursuit right across the board. Taking example from them, saying, look, you know, what more can I do as an individual in these circumstances where you feel a sense of renewed hope and that sort of thing? What can you do to make sure that you make more of a contribution to taking Barbados forward, all those areas of weakness? Because, you know, I said it before the elections, I continue to say, there are some weaknesses in the way that we have done our thing. The lack of efficiency, the degree to which we have not strived to be a bit more creative in trying to find solutions to problems, the way that we lick up government property, the attitude towards getting something from government and not paying for it and that sort of thing. These are the kinds of things the kinds of attitudes and factors that remain relevant to moving Barbados forward today. I sincerely hope that by making the kind of change that we have made, that it will inspire more people in the country to make that kind of contribution. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, welcome.
Yeah, good morning, Dave Ellis. A couple of things here. The first thing, a lot of records that be broken. The first female prime minister, the first time we have had a party who did not regain a seat And determined was the lowest voter turnout we had in the history of Barbados. I was telling Peter Wickham, even if you take up the people that were turned back or people that, when they got there, they said the line was too long.
And but you know how many of them were turned back?
But I'm trying to
draw. You don't know? Example.
We don't know.
And how many people were frustrated at the polls?
Right, but listen, I'll be telling you, there's two nominations in Barbados, religious nomination, do not vote. They do not vote. I just assume that the ones that were turned back was about 10,000 of them.
But that's an assumption. Let's await the investigation, which is going to be done into the Electoral and Boundaries Commission.
Right, but the point is, when you have a situation of 122,000 people who did not cast a vote, that would tell that the people are not interested in neither the Barbados, their party, nor the Democratic Party.
Well, first of all, you have to take into consideration the frustration caused when people had to stay in lines very long. When they finally got there, they discovered that their names were not on the register.
Uh-huh.
They went somewhere else and had to be butting about the place. A guy told me he went through that experience. He said,
Mr. Ellis,
and suggested to me that he was more likely to support the Democratic Labour Party than the BLP.
Okay.
And yet he said he had to abandon it because of that.
But those people, those amount of people that have it, still will come to 100,000.
I mean, I don't expect it will come to 100,000.
Oh, good. So, you're going to come for the other people who did not turn up at all?
Well, I just want to get a better sense of how many people felt that they were disenfranchised.
Right, the other thing, Mr. Ellis, you had the copy of the mini manifesto in Barbados, and then later, I always say you, with this, you have to get things to work. In the United States, that would never happen. They would be pulling this mini manifesto to parts. There would be some for and some against it. I remember when Donald Trump first getting, he decided that he's going to take taxes off for the people who invest in the America, which should be rich people. And they started to pull it apart. And you know what he called him? He told him to do your mass. Have you done the mass with this manifesto of the Barbados Labour Party, Mr. Ellis?
No, I haven't.
But you should do your mass. And let the Barbados Labour Party supporters who call it here do the mass first and tell us if it's
so why you don't do the mass too?
You're
not a Bajan.
Yeah, I already dismissed it as total nonsense.
Well,
okay?
we know that you had taken that position ever since during the election campaign, and I think you were supporting one of the other political parties or something like that, UPP.
Yes, that's right. And I'll tell you something before you go.
Why don't you talk about the performance of the UPP?
UPP is a new party. The first time they ran a general election, they would have gained the experience. They have young, bright people that are already, and they told the ladies, but come again and start in the next 2 years.
Don't you don't run for the party?
Pardon me?
Why you don't run?
For the UPP?
Yeah.
You can't run for everybody. I told the
ladies. Who else are running for then?
I have an organization in the Five Star League.
The Five Star League?
That's right.
Yeah?
We are running.
How come you didn't? You didn't run any candidates this time?
No, no. We talked. It would make sense because this is we could see that the people, mostly people that we spoken to, were going over with voting for the Barbados Labour Party. So we decided not to run. But anyhow,
you're the leader of this Five Star League?
No, the leader is a gentleman by the name of Colin Wilberforce Canterbury.
And what role do you play?
I'm just a member. Remember that.
How old is this party now?
This party is going on to 2 years old. 2 years old. I want to say that I'm planning to let Mr. Canterbury later don't come in the studio and have a conversation with you.
You plan it? But I got to agree to that first. Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Mr. Ellis.
Hi.
There was a break in communication while I was saying a gold crown of merit for you in the field of journalism would be an honor well deserved. Mr. Ellis, this year is 22 years that I am on record as being the first person to come out publicly saying that Ms. Motley is going to become the first woman Prime Minister of Barbados. I recall she asked me, Mr. Beats, what are you trying to do with me? But deep down inside of me, I made a personal reflection of a woman Prime Minister of Israel, Ms. Muir, then India, Pakistan, Ceylon and Dominica. I recall Banshee was first defeated by the late Leroy Braffy. Then on her youthful second time around, she defeated Mr. Leroy McLean. However, there is a biblical reading, those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. Miss Motley is indeed a very strong young lady who had to endure a multiplicity of critics left, right, and center. I recalled an incident which I told her to stand clear of, and she did listen. This ambitious, brilliant, articulate, compassionate, and political genius is very humble, grateful, and accommodating. And the writing was on the wall for the Democratic Labour Party when one of the defeated candidates told her what to do if she wanted attention.
Okay, thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
A blessed good morning to you, my good friend David. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I am ecstatic, and you would know that.
I can understand.
This is your good friend, Mr. Harvey Culture. I saw you in Kingsland at the launch of the manifesto, but I didn't give you a show. I just let you roam through the crowd and look around or whatever you wanted to do under a good Barbados Labour Party crowd. You were comfortable and happy. Now, I want to say I am so happy that the outcome, because when you think that you can unfair people, God has the last say. And the power is within the poor people's hand, and they have spoken. Now, I want to say congratulations to the Honorable Prime Minister, which is the first female Prime Minister of Barbados. I got the opportunity to do it personally at Robert Street on the wee hours of Friday morning. And I want to do it now on national radio, because you know that I have been batting for this party for as long as you can remember. And I also want to give kudos to Mrs. Amor Motley and Mr. Elliot Motley for raising such a fabulous young lady. And I've always had discussion with her mother over a period of time, and she's always told me the bright, articulate young girl that she was, always studying, always coming up with top grades, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Also told me that the former Prime Minister, not going to call anybody names, that she worked under, would always say to her, how this lady gets so bright. And I would like 8 or 9 more within my cabinet. So we have a good Prime Minister. We have a humane woman as Prime Minister. We have a people's person as Prime Minister. And I guarantee you that she will work, because she loves people. She puts country first, and she loves poor people, and she wants to see them happy. So I'm glad that the Barbados Labour Party have gotten back the opportunity to run this country, and we are going to settle down, we are going to work hard, and we are going to bring back this country where it should be. Because, David, a lot of people have been laughing at us over a period of time. Your man has been out in the field a long time, and you know where Barbados was. And Barbados has gone low, low, low in the rankings, as opposed to the other Caribbean islands that was way below us. So I hope that God will give all of the cabinet members strength.
All right.
And what it takes for them to get through.
You had a good long run in this regard, and I have every intention of encouraging positive comments as it relates to the victory of the Barbados Labour Party. But I'm also reminded of the fact that in politics, you can be a hero today and you can be zero tomorrow. There was a time when the Democratic Labour Party went through exactly this kind of experience. Today, people are so critical of how they ran the country. So I take the positives, because I know the day will come when the Barbados Labour Party will itself go through that kind of negative experience. One of the things, though, that has been obscured to a large extent by the size of this victory is that nasty practice of apparent vote buying that raised its head yet again in this election campaign. And the question is, what can Barbados really do to stamp this out? There are some people who believe that the politicians are fair game on election day. And what they set out to do is to tell politicians that in exchange for money, they can get people to come out and vote for them and that sort of thing. We also have reports of some practices in some of these constituencies. Indeed, it has grown considerably across the board. There was one constituency where you thought that, it really started to mushroom there. But with each succeeding election, we have seen it spread further and further across this country. And it is disturbing to see how Barbadians can line a street, especially in the afternoon of a general election campaign, or general election rather, and wait there, apparently, for people to come and put money in their hands as an inducement to vote. I mean, and I feel that they really are seeking to take advantage of the political class in this country. There needs to be a lot more focus on that. And the real question is, if we do nothing about it, where do you believe it will take us as a country some election day? I'm really concerned about it, and because it's growing. And I also want to say this. I've observed that there are some people in Barbados who seem to believe that the secret to success in an election is hand-to-hand combat, as I call it, with money on election day. Now, I suppose people can only come to that conclusion based upon the experience that they have had. But I've always felt, I've been around elections for quite a while, and I know that there's an attitude that people have had that they will take your money, but there's no guarantee that you can influence their vote. And people over the years have paid a high price, figuratively and literally, only to discover that they paid and didn't get what they were looking for. So I think it's been obscured to some extent, but talking with a young lady on a few nights ago, she told me she was in a constituency, and what she saw with her own two eyes, wow. She said it was shocking. It was shocking. So this is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.